Hello, I'm Alison Larkin, writer, comedian, narrator, and host of the Jane Austen podcast. Join me as we embark on a journey through Austen's timeless stories, starting with Pride and Prejudice. The Jane Austen podcast with Alison Larkin is available wherever you listen to podcasts.
From the Orkneys to the Channel Isles on that October day, the wind it blew 2,000 miles from Hoy to Newlyn Bay. And 70 mothers, sons and 9, they died off Eyemouth shore. Those bonny boys who held the line would plough the waves no more.
Hello everyone and welcome to the latest installment of Borders Blatherings, the podcast where Mary Craig and I shine a light on the curious, shadowy and often magical history of the Scottish Borders region. Today, Mary, all well?
Yes, it's a fine autumn morning, so I like autumn, so yeah.
It is now, but earlier today when I was out with little Cassie on our morning walk, the wind was howling. The rain was teeming down, and yet I felt strangely warm.
Yes, it's an interesting autumn that appears to be
very interesting
coming to us.
Yeah. So there's the weather for you. Now, you know how my brain works. I like to jump around trying to make connections between what's going on nowadays and what's happened in the past.
Yes.
Yeah. I like doing. And one of the joys of not scripting what we do is I can just gently lead you into a topic and then let you do all the heavy lifting, as it were.
Let's hope I can pick up on what you're going to lead me into.
Well, just a few things that have happened to me of late. I mentioned the weather this morning on my walk with Gussie and how strange it was. A couple of days ago, I was working with a group of managers at Volkswagen doing an online English seminar.
Right.
And I had divided the lesson into two kind of parts. And the first thing we looked at were idioms and phrases with a nautical origin.
Right.
So the sea and sailing, if you like. Mm-hmm. So once, and cliches, you know, like, oh, don't worry, there are plenty more fish in the sea.
Okay.
And so there's the fish. And, you know, so once we decided that it's not all plain sailing at the moment in the world of electronic electric battery production, but that if we can steer a true course through the choppy waters, we'll avoid the business going on the rocks, blah, 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 blah.
Right.
So we're doing all that. So that's the sea.
Mm-hmm.
In the second part of the lesson, we were doing a bit of vocabulary that they often struggle with in their press releases and brochures and publicity. The difference between an aim, an objective, a plan, a vision, a mission, a strategy. And one of them, I thought quite brilliantly, linked both parts of the lesson together and said, okay, Doug, this message we read from the UK government, stop the boats, there's the boats.
Mm-hmm.
What is that?
Ah,
I said, well, that's just a soundbite, in my opinion.
Yeah.
And has as much value as get Brexit done. Brexit means Brexit, but
yeah,
it's effective in a way. So we have the weather.
Mm-hmm.
We have the sea.
Mm-hmm.
We have the boats.
Mm-hmm.
Any idea yet where we're going?
You mentioned fish.
I did mention fish.
So yes, I think, are we heading up to the Berwickshire coast?
We might well be. And finally, I have. Now, you're the archivist, but I did dig deep into an article in the Edinburgh Evening News from around, and this will give it away, the 15th of October.
Yes.
You got it now.
Yep.
And here we have, direct quote, a storm of extraordinary violence set in on Thursday night and raged for the greater part of yesterday all over the country, causing great destruction to property and loss of life.
Mm-hmm.
All telegraphic communication between Scotland and the metropolis, wherever that is, we knew our place.
I see.
All communication between Scotland and the metropolis was broken down. by the wreckage of the wires, and in several parts of the country, similar isolation has occurred. 1881. So now you know where I'm going with this. Sea, fish, boats, weather.
It's Black Friday, the Eyemouth fishing disaster.
You got it in one.
Yep. Yeah. And this is a story where my favourite bugbear, my favourite bogeyman, is to blame the Church of Scotland.
Surely it was the weather.
To start this story, we have to go back to the 17th century. Uh-huh. Now, the fishing waters off that part of the Berkshire coast are very rich waters. And everybody was a fisherman that could be a fisherman. And the women were fisher girls, and they made a good living from the sea. They made a very good living from the sea.
So the women would gut and clean and
absolutely.
Yeah.
And the church decided that there wasn't a huge amount of money around in the 17th century, so they had what was known as a tithe or a tind, and you gave a tenth. If you were a merchant in Edinburgh or Glasgow, you would give 10% of your money. If you were a fisherman, you gave 10% of your catch. And the church became quite wealthy on 10% of your catch.
Mm-hmm.
So that was fine, but then things moved on and money became more readily available, more people had money, and by the 19th century, it was no longer fish. You didn't hand over
physically
a couple of herring.
Yeah.
You handed over money,
uh-huh.
Which was fine. And then there was a minister, a local minister, who knew that sometimes you catch fish and sometimes you don't, because mm-hmm. fish swim about. They're slippery little so-and-sos, so sometimes you don't always have the catch. And so he didn't always take the full tithes. He would take the tithes when the catch was good, but when the catch wasn't so good, he didn't take it. He was a good guy.
So he was embedded in the community, in a sense. Yeah.
He was a good guy and he knew what was what.
Yeah.
However, as the century goes on, it developed from being a tenth of your catch to being a fixed payment. And the payment was fixed by the church.
Oh my word.
So what they wanted was they wanted money, and they wanted a fixed amount of money, irrespective of the catch. And this obviously doesn't work when it's a bad year for catches. You know, if you don't catch the fish, but you've still got to hand over whatever it is you've got to hand over. So that's starting to cause a little bit of friction between the local fishing community and the minister.
And are we talking what I would say would be the established church?
Yeah, this is the Kirk of Scotland at the moment. Several things were happening at the one time, though, of course, because in the 1840s, what you had was you had the Methodists pitch up in Eyemouth,
uh-huh.
and they establish a church. And guess what? They don't ask for a tithe.
Mm-hmm.
So a few people drift across towards there. And then the Successionists pitch up, and they don't ask for the tithe. And then there's the Great Disruption of 1843, mm-hmm. when the Free Kirk is there. So they don't ask for a tithe. So lots of people in Eyemouth were drifting away from the Kirk of Scotland, so they didn't have to pay this payment. At the same time, there was a Harbour Trust, which appears to have been the most mismanaged thing ever going. They were supposed to build a harbour, which they did, and maintain the harbour, which they didn't, and maintain the harbour for the fishing fleet, which they absolutely did not. But the fishermen had to pay, obviously, to be able to tie their boats and to use the harbour. So they had to pay the church, and they had to pay the harbour, and they had to make a living for their families, obviously. Well, the Methodist Church, the Succession Church, the Wee Free Church, they all sort of drift away, and you end up, everybody's back in the Church of Scotland, having to make this payment.
Yeah.
And then the minister that was local left, and they got a new minister in, a chap called Stephen Bell, who was not local, and he wanted the payment in full, no matter what. There were 2 or 3 years of bad fishing.
Mm-hmm.
People were struggling, and the Harbour Trust was asking people for payments because they were just mismanaging their books. The fishermen couldn't pay that. And tensions rose, and eventually the fishermen stopped paying the church because they had to pay the Harbour Trust, otherwise they couldn't bring the boats in, so they stopped paying the church. Reverend Stephen Bell complains up to the presbytery, and the presbytery complained so much that they said, "We're going to excommunicate you if you don't pay."
Oh my word.
Now, that mattered in the 19th century. People were religious. They might be annoyed at the local minister or annoyed at paying something, but, you know, you don't want to be excommunicated. So tensions start to build. And there's a chap called, well, he's known as the fisherman, the great fisherman. And he starts to lead the fishermen and saying, no, we're not going to do this. We're absolutely not going to put up with this. And it builds and builds and builds. And eventually one night, it's a Saturday night, they've been out, they've been fishing. They didn't catch very much. They're back in. They're getting a bit grumpy. They're in the local pub and they know that they're going to go to church the next day and they're going to have to pay this money.
Wow, wow.
And a bit of a fight starts.
Mm-hmm.
And a real bit of a fight starts. And because of the fighting, the minister complains to the presbytery complains, and the army is sent in. And there's a series of fights and riots with armed soldiers bearing down on the fishermen. So the fishermen have got no alternative. They have to back down. So they back down because obviously they're going to make a living. So the sort of riots happen for 2 or 3 years, and then that sort of calms down because the fishermen say, well, we've got to make a living, until you get into 1881. The Harbour Trust is putting its fees up. The minister, Mr. Bell, is demanding payment. And the fishermen are getting squeezed in the middle.
Mm-hmm.
So you get to October, and there are 2 or 3 of the fishermen haven't been paying what they're supposed to pay. And the minister is saying to them, if you don't pay, I'm going to excommunicate you. Mm-hmm. The Harbour Trust is saying, if you don't pay, you're not getting in. And so the minister says, well, you're going to have to go out to sea. And say, well, we can't. It's bad weather. And he says to them, you have to go out to sea. Otherwise, I'm going to excommunicate you and your wives and your children and your parents, everybody. So the fishermen are standing there on the 14th of October. And they can see there is a storm. They can see the storm is there.
The weather conditions are known by this
They're
time.
Absolutely known. Yeah. Right? And they're all saying, we're not putting our boats out in that. And the minister's saying, well, if you don't put your boats out today, this is, you know, this was Thursday evening, Friday morning, if you don't put your boats out on Sunday, you're all getting excommunicated in my church. He's got the backing of the presbytery.
Goodness sake.
So I don't know if he either was so ignorant of the weather that he genuinely thought that storm was going to abate, possibly, or he thought that the fishermen were able to sail in that sort of water. I'm not sure, I don't know. But he pushed and he pushed and he pushed, and eventually they said, okay, we'll go out. And they did. 46 boats went out from Eyemouth. A few went out from St. Abbs, a few other places they went out. And they fished all day, and then they started to come back. And actually they were catching fish, because storm waters can rise fish.
Yeah.
So they were catching fish. And they were starting to come back in. Now, their mothers, their daughters, their sisters all knew the weather. These were people that know about the weather. They're standing at the harbour, looking out, because they're worried sick about what's going to happen. They can see the boats starting to come in. And the first 2 or 3 boats just about make it into the mouth of the harbour. And the storm catches them. And the ships are dashed against the harbour wall.
And their relatives are actually seeing this happen.
And they actually watch their brothers, their fathers, and their sons drown in front of them. 23 out of the 46 boats are lost. 189 men died. And several fishing cottages were damaged as well.
Mm-hmm.
And that is Black Friday. That is what happened on that day.
Not, 2 things occur to me. Not only am I getting a little bit angry listening to this, is my mind jumping to modern parallels. So in a sense, the rich and powerful are taking the money, and those lower down the chain are taking the risk.
I haven't even told you about the relief fund that was set up yet.
Ah, right.
So on the Sunday morning, Stephen Bell gets into his pulpit and preaches and expects the tithes to be paid. Nobody's turning up to the congregation. They're in bits. Because for the next 2 or 3 days, there are dead bodies washing up.
Mm-hmm.
There are bits of boats washing up.
Yeah.
There are children who have lost their father, wives who've lost their husbands. There are families where the father and the son were both lost in the same boat.
And are these boats, if you like, modern for the time? Are they
relatively so.
Yeah,
they're pretty big, yes.
Yeah.
So because the storm had been so massive and because there had been such a tragedy, there was a relief fund set up. And people donated from right the way across Scotland and into Northumberland.
Yeah, yeah.
And they raised £50,000, which is the equivalent of about £4.5 million today. And you think, well, that's good. That's a good amount of money. Except the Harbour Trust got their sticky paws on some of that £4.5 million. So they managed to get some. And then the church managed to get its sticky paws on some of it as well. So the families who lost a loved one got what was barely the equivalent of £20,000 today.
Mm-hmm.
So you've lost your husband and you get £20,000.
Mm-hmm.
But you've lost your husband, so you've got no right to be living in that fishing cottage anymore. And this is October.
You lose tenure,
facing down a Scottish borders winter.
Yeah.
You've got no husband bringing in a wage. You've got no son bringing in a wage. And you might have £40,000. How long is that going to last you? Absolutely devastated. There were, as you said in the newspaper, all sorts of newspaper articles written. There were some newspaper articles and some letters to the paper that said it was disgraceful that the Harbour Trust hadn't, you know, had a better harbour for them.
Yeah.
And it was awful that, you know, they'd got a little bit of money out of the fund. But an awful lot of the articles and an awful lot of the letters blamed the fishermen for going out. Why were they so stupid as to go out in the face of a storm? Because the fishermen in Fraserburgh hadn't gone out, or Arbroath hadn't gone out, or Greenock hadn't gone out, or Helensburgh hadn't gone out. There was no criticism of Stephen Bell, the minister. Or if there was, it certainly wasn't public. At no point did the church apologise. At no point did the local presbytery say, oh, well, tell you what, we won't take the tithe from you for a couple of months.
Indeed, yeah.
Absolutely nothing.
So it could be argued then that these fishermen were quite simply forced into taking the risk.
Yes. They either went out and fished, potentially to lose their lives, or they stayed at home and they and their entire families were cast out of the church, which meant that they had lost their souls. That was the reality of it. I know it's difficult for us today if you're not religious, but that was it.
Yeah.
You were going to hellfire and damnation, or you were going out to fish.
Mm-hmm.
Those were your choices. Stephen Bell, the minister, it was discovered, owned two or three properties in the town.
Uh-huh.
He got money out the fund to rebuild those properties, and he was able to rent those properties out. For about 6 months after it happened, there were very few people in the congregation because they were a little bit annoyed.
Uh-huh. To put it mildly.
They ended up going back because he threatened to excommunicate them as well. I know of people today in Eyemouth who will say that their great grandparents never went back to the kirk. They were so angry at what had happened.
Yeah.
The men had lost their lives. The women had lost fathers and brothers and sons. And then they were blamed for it. They were blamed for it.
Mm-hmm.
The Harbour Trust got a little bit of money, and later on it got more money to build a better trust, but it was awful. And I'm not sure about today, but for a long time thereafter, the fishing fleet in Eyemouth never went out on a Friday. They would not fish on a Friday because of what had happened.
There are so many parallels with this
story. Aren't there just?
There are just so many parallels.
Yeah.
The blame game.
Oh, instantly, the minister was making sure. I mean, he went on to live a long life and died with his boots on in his bed, surrounded by his family.
Yeah.
He did not drown in front of his family's eyes.
Prior to the tithe being imposed by the church, were the fishermen if you like, were they seen as contributing members of the community, and their catch would be distributed, it would be given to, without any powerful people getting involved in the whole thing.
Yes, I mean, it was quite communally done. Yeah. I mean, before the Reformation, the Roman Catholic priest, as it would have been paid in fish. And it was, you know, I mean, Eyemouth was quite a prosperous little town because the fishing is so good.
Friday in fish,
But it was, and when the church first imposed a tithe in the 17th century, it was fine because you gave a tenth of your catch. So it meant if you had a good catch, you gave you 10%, or if you had a small catch. Yeah. The problem was when the church decided to change that to a fixed sum, irrespective of what the catch was.
Yeah.
Like taxation levels today that don't quite reflect what people earn.
Yeah.
You know, and the forcing of people into boats in bad weather because they are threatened that, you know, if they don't do it, that's it, their entire family is going to be devastated. And I mean, being excommunicated, There's a theological fact if you then felt as if you were going to go to hell and with your entire family.
Yeah.
But if you were excommunicated, you could end up out of a job and out of a house because you were godless. So why would anybody employ you? You were godless. Why would anybody rent you a house? It wasn't just, you know, there's the horror and the theology of losing God's grace, but there's the practicalities of you're out of a job, you're out of a house, your family are shunned in the community. Excommunication was a huge, big thing.
How are they squaring this? Because the catastrophic weather was force majeure. It was God's will. You know, it's strange how the church could square that.
Yes, I'm not quite sure what Stephen Bell thought. I mean, did he think that God wouldn't drown these ships? I mean, no other fishing fleet put out. It just didn't. You know, I mean, you can check right the way across Northern Europe.
Yeah.
The fishing fleets just went, no, we're not going out in that. We're not daft.
Because this is a European-wide fairly.
Weather
catastrophe. Yeah.
The weather had started to build. The storm had actually started the night before on the Thursday evening.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you could sort of stand and watch. You didn't need to be. It wasn't as if the storm arose when the boats were out. It was already stormy when the boats put to sea.
Yeah.
You know, if the fisherman had said, we think there's a storm coming, and you couldn't see it, someone like me, I can't read the weather, I don't know about these things, but you know, fisher folk, they can read the weather, and they can say, look, we can see a storm building.
They know what's coming.
And the minister says, I don't believe you, or I don't think it's going to be that bad, or go out and get some fishing done before it arises.
Yeah.
That would have been one thing, but they actually put to sea when there was a storm out there.
You remind me of a modern parallel here when it comes to, say, a doctor's strike. We hear, well, the doctors in Scotland have accepted. Well, this group of teachers have accepted the government's pay offer. This idea of dividing. So you mentioned earlier, one of the arguments was, well, the fishermen from Coldingham, they didn't go out.
Yeah.
And the people from further north, they didn't go out. So it's all your fault.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Uh-huh. This is a nonsense argument, in my opinion.
Yeah.
But there you have it.
Yeah.
But
the presbytery, I mean, you're right, the fishermen in local areas didn't go out, but the presbytery didn't seem to care about that. All the presbytery wanted was that money.
Yeah.
Now, I don't know if the presbytery were desperate for money or if it was just a case of they were backing their man because Stephen Bell had made such a thing about it.
Yeah.
The presbytery was backing him up. I don't know. And then, of course, once it had happened, everybody closed ranks. So the local newspapers, the Edinburgh Evening News, these sorts of newspapers were publishing things like, oh, but there's a relief fund been set up.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, practically the minister's in charge of the relief fund and, oh, it's terrible. And there were actually letters into the newspaper saying, oh, it's so bad for the minister. He's had to conduct so many funerals. What a shame. Poor lad. You're thinking, wait a minute here, you know. And apparently there were some, we don't know this for definite, but there are anecdotes where Stephen Bell was refusing to hold funeral services if there was no body.
If there was, yeah.
And people were saying, but we know there's not going to be a body because, you know, it's a month down the line.
Lost at sea.
They are lost at sea. And he's saying, well, I need to have a body to do the old, you know, ashes to ashes and dust to dust in the sure and hopeful resurrection of the life. I can't do it if there's nothing to put in the grave. So yet again, the people were just being abandoned, but they're being treated worse than that. It was just a case of, I pushed you to make the payment, I pushed you to go out, I threatened you with excommunication, and I don't care that your father and your son and your brother have died, I'm not doing a burial service for you. So you're getting no relief for your grief. You know, nothing was happening. And as I say, nobody, the presbytery were giving him sympathy for what was going on.
You mentioned there was a relief fund set up and how that came about. Were the treasury involved?
Oh, no, the relief fund was entirely voluntary.
This was a voluntary thing.
Oh, no, the government didn't do anything.
Yeah.
The government absolutely did not do anything. There was no monies put in by the treasury, as far as I'm aware, from the Scottish office or anything like that. And I'm not aware of any great funds coming in. There was nothing that I'm aware of from the Church of Scotland. This was ordinary people.
So there was ordinary no levelling up. No levelling up.
It was folk from Fraserburgh, or folk from Ullapool, or folk from Oberon, ordinary people in Glasgow and Edinburgh that liked eating fish, suddenly went, I'll give in to that fund. I don't think they realised that some of the money would be snaffled off by the minister, and I don't think they realised that some of the money would be snaffled off by the Harbour Trust, who continued to mismanage their money for years. Although, interestingly, the harbour that is currently in Eyemouth was built by money that came from the European Union. So can I get that point in? But
I should have done all the church stuff. I wanted to end on that little thing that, to my best knowledge, over 100 years later, the harbour of Eyemouth is given a substantial amount of money through an EU
fund. Because Eyemouth is still a fishing village and there is still good fishing waters off there.
So let's thank the EU in some part. Indeed, they did that.
But as I say, when wee Jimmy in Glasgow decides to put in his sixpence towards the fund, I don't think he thought the Harbour Trust was getting anything. Because the Harbour Trust, they just mismanaged their money. They didn't have a clue what they were doing.
This reminds me of the seed money for the Darien project.
Ordinary people put their money in. The thing is mismanaged. They don't get their money back. Yeah. And the people that deserved the money, you know, didn't really get it. And maybe you did get £20,000. And I'm meaning £20,000 in today's money. Your husband's dead. The love of your life is dead and all you've got is £20,000 and you've been put out your cottage.
Put a fiscal value on everything today.
And your three kids are saying, where's daddy, when's he coming back?
And
you spend the next few days with dead bodies, dead bloated bodies washing up along the coastline. You know, it was horrific. For a good few days afterwards, there were bits of bodies and bits of boats and bits of boats that people could recognise and
And in the 1880s, perhaps the ultimate slap in the face is the fact we're not holding a funeral service.
Because there's no body. Stephen Bell just went, no, if there's no body, I am not holding a funeral service. You know, I don't know, but I think less than a third of those who drowned, their bodies were recovered. They were mostly from Eyemouth, as I say, some from St. Abbs, but probably less than a third of the bodies were actually recovered. The boats that had made it to the harbour mouth, those bodies were, although they were horrifically mangled on the rocks on the river, but the boats that hadn't made it into the harbour, no, they just went. They just went. And it's the fact that there were women standing on the shoreline who could see their husbands drown in front of their eyes. You know, the sort of thing that today you would be instantly thinking, right, PTSD, they need counselling for that. That was a case of no. And by the way, you're out the cottage.
And you're out,
And you're getting no funeral and, you know, you've got no living. And then, of course, because half of the fishing fleet has gone, for the rest of the winter, for what fish was being caught, there was less of a catch coming in. Yeah. Guess what? The church still wanted its payment.
They still
its
have
payment,
a fixed amount in place, yeah.
And the harbour still wants its payment.
Yeah.
And for the women who were left without husbands, there was no fish for them to gut. There was no fish for them to sell at market. So they're left destitute. So the whole thing was a mess from start to finish. And as I say, Stephen Bell, the minister, as far as I'm aware, never regretted anything that he did.
Mm.
At no point, you know, there's no diary entries or letters we have from him saying, oh, well, maybe I got that one wrong. Absolutely nothing. He was completely implacable. The money was due to the church, the money was due to the church. And if they were, I think his attitude was, if they were so poor fishermen that they couldn't make it back in front of a storm, that was their fault. Not his for forcing them to go out in the first place.
Yeah.
Hey there, this is Justin Bartha. I made a funny new podcast, King of the Egg Cream. It has the greatest cast in the history of podcasts with actors like Louis Black.
I'm torn by my feelings for two women.
Bobby Cannavale.
You can eat it, or if someone hits you, you can put it on your cut.
Melanie Lynskey.
I wonder what these marvelous things are that look just like boiled chicken feet.
Jason Ritter.
I can break things and pick locks and kill people.
Michael Stuhlbarg.
The whole point is to inspire people that they should make themselves better.
Ari Grainer.
No, don't whet its appetite. What are you, an idiot?
Me, Justin Bartha.
That's not just any egg cream, that's a Lemke's special.
And all narrated by the hilarious Richard Kind.
This is the story of Harry Dalowitz and how he rose from nothing to become New York's King of the Egg Cream.
So if you like funny true stories, come listen to King of the Egg Cream, available wherever you get your podcasts.
Yeah, Mary, as I was saying earlier, this whole Eyemouth disaster story has left me very sad and also very angry. And perhaps we could get a little bit of cheer because friend and musician Tom Bonner has just joined us. Tom is a musician, a local musician, and he's got his guitar with him, I say, and he has kindly agreed to play the song, The Eyemouth Disaster, with a little bit of introduction.
Well, the song was written by an old friend of mine called John Watt, who's been dead a number of years now, and he wrote the song in 1964, and in 1966 we did a concert. I was 16, by the way. We did a concert in Eyemouth Town Hall, and Barbara Dixon was also on the bill. She'd be 18 at the time, and and when he sung the song, because there's a lot of families who obviously are still in Eyemouth, yeah, and mentioned in the song, you could have heard a pin drop and had a huge ovation at the end. It was a really moving experience. But John wrote the song because he did a lot of work in Eyemouth. He was a printer, but anyway, he did a lot of work in Eyemouth, and he met a man called Story Colin, who was the harbour master in the 60s.
Yeah.
And Story Colin, he told him the story about the Eyemouth disaster, and John got a lot of information from Story Colin. So, song goes like this. By the Dowie Rocks o' Harker, though deadly were the signs, who'd sailed the Eyemouth 5 days with 1,000 baited lines. Though a glass-like sea and a cloudless sky made the elders bid them stay. For these are the time when brave men die, but the Havilands held the sway. 2 score and 5 sailed out that day, for the depot they were bound. With all sails set from Eyemouth Bay, none better could be found. And 14 score of fishers brave sent out one heartfelt plea, that they'd be spared upon the wave to reap the whitefish from the sea. 3 leagues from shore the lines were cast, and the wind it held its breath. While the sails hung limp for every mast, the sea was still as death. But death was the bride that came at noon, cut the ribbons fae the keels. 'Twas a raging wave at time of tune, and took her bonny chiel. The wind it raged and the sea ran high, stripped the sail from every mast, and many brave boys were soon to die ere that long night was past. First home the onward stout and true Andre Dougal to the fore, no a tear in his eye though his son he knew lay dead on Eyemouth shore. Wives and bairns stood at the quay, Jim Scott was one weak dewed. Press home came ploughing through the sea, but Jimmy he was dead. The brothers lay on the rocks across the Janet neath the waves. The cruel sea's gain was Ima's loss. Aye, the sea was a cruel grave. The Excellent beached on Holy Isle, Tom Martin washed ashore. On Eyemouth coast for mile and mile, the death toll mounted more. Well, at Monday's wake, the crowd they wept, and despaired each dawn and day, as poor limp corpses they were swept to the shores of Eyemouth Bay. As many's a bride has lost her groom, as the death toll quickly grew. Craigs and Collins met their doom, I Burgan, Fairbairn too. Mortman, Scott, all I'm of bread, they died in the wind and rain. The flute, oh, I'm a tune lay dead, but our sons would rise again. The grinding turn of the hairspiel in October 81 made every man and woman kneel in prayer for Ima's sons. For that was the price they had to pay, the living and the dead. And the price that Ima paid that day to earn her daily bread.
Contained herein are the heresies of Radolf Burntwine, erstwhile monk turned traveling medical investigator. Join me as I uncover the blasphemous truth of a plague-ridden world, that ours is not a loving God, and we are not its favored children. The Heresies of Radolf Burntwine, coming January 2nd, wherever podcasts are available.